It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 511. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also /MikeNationNet. That's the Mike Tech Show Facebook page. We also have the wiki, and that's at mtswiki.com. There you have links to all of the past shows, links to the show notes, the audio. It's a great resource for everything about the Mike Tech Show, and that is listener-supported and maintained. Barbara, who is Citizen X in the chat, when she's here, maintains that, and that hosting is generously provided by Winston Wolf. So I thank them for all the hard work and everything they do in maintaining that wiki. I have a lot of stories from this week from the trenches, helping clients and solving problems. Some are little, some are big, and just everything that I've been working on this past week. Now, last Friday was the email migration for one of my biggest clients. And that migration was to the Smarsh email service, and I beat them up the last show because of everything forcing us to Outlook 2010. Learned a lot from this past weekend. One of the problems when you're migrating from a local Exchange server to a hosted Exchange service, and especially if you have Windows 2008 or greater. Now, the server we have is Small Business Server 2008. Now, Small Business Server includes SQL and Exchange. It's a domain controller. It's all in one, everything, all you can eat in one server. And they're great for small companies. So now my client wants to move to Exchange hosted. Makes sense. They only had Office 2007, and every time we tried to connect when we were migrating to the new email service, when we created the profile would automatically change back to the profile pointing to the local Exchange server. So we took a different tact this past weekend, and this is what we did, and I'm going to try to capture. I don't know if there's links to this, but I have some articles that were put together from the email service provider, and they sent them after a very long, heated discussion about auto-discover. One of the important components when you are migrating to an Exchange-hosted solution is an entry that you got to make in your external DNS called auto-discover. And it saves a lot of time when you have Outlook and you want to set up the profile to the new connection of the Exchange server. We're going to get very geeky, very technical here. Don't worry. This is deep tech for some of the things I'm going to talk about, but I'm going to move on to be a little more general. There's going to be a little more... I would say for everybody a solution. So it's coming. But right now, we're going to geek out a little bit for this Outlook and the setup. The AutoDiscover entry is required because Outlook, starting with Outlook 2007, when you automatically create a profile and you put the email address, it goes to the cloud and goes to the internet, goes to your network, and looks for an auto-discover and where it should go to get the configuration for configuring the rest of the profile. When you have Outlook and you're connecting to a hosted exchange solution, you have to put a custom proxy together, and it's usually, you know, a little complicated. You got to go into the advanced profile settings and you got to check that you want a proxy, and you got to fill out some information, check some boxes, check how you want to authenticate, and then you're okay. And there's a lot of details. You got to put the server, detailed server name. One of the problems in coming off a local exchange server is you have a local AutoDiscover already configured. So here are the two tips. One, you have to export all of your mail. I exported everything to a PST on every local computer. Then I went back and shut off all of the exchange services. You need to shut the exchange services down so nothing can respond while you're working locally. Now, I'm not deleting any mail. I'm not making any change. I'm disabling the services. And I make a note of all of the exchange services, and there's a lot of them, that I'm disabling. I'm also disabling any third-party programs that are connected to the exchange server. So I'm disabling the semantic mail connector for looking for spam, and, you know, so a couple semantic services, I shut them down. Now, the important changes that I made, I created a local DNS entry for AutoDiscover, pointing AutoDiscover to the cloud-based server solution that the provider wanted me to. So I made a local DNS entry, a CNAME alias in DNS Manager. I did that. Then, and I take this back, actually before you shut the exchange services down, you have to run a command at the shell prompt of the exchange server. I'm going to cut and paste this command into a text file that'll be linked in the show notes because it's too complex for going over here. It's a get client access server command that you got to run, and then you disable the AutoDiscover service. And when I say this, it's not a service where you can just go into the services and say, oh, there's AutoDiscover and shut it off. This is a built-in service into Exchange that you need to disable. And the only way to disable it is running this command at the prompt, at the console prompt of an Exchange server. This is very, you have to be very careful when you're doing this. This has to be done if you have a local exchange server that is 2008 or greater. I've never ran into this problem moving from Exchange 2003. It's a piece of cake. SBS 2003, Exchange server, regular server 2003, no issues. But when you get to 2008 and Outlook 2007, they created this AutoDiscover to make configuring Outlook easier. I had to go through this Friday night, and we had a very successful implementation. We then went back Saturday to finish because there was a couple changes. I had a very detailed checklist that Ken and I went through and followed it to the letter, tested, made sure everything worked. While I'm doing this, one of the machines that I need to update, and it's a spare system, I did something very stupid, and it was a self-inflicted wound. I didn't have the patience to wait. It was an older system. Not that old. It just hasn't been turned on in a while. So I wanted to see that it could boot. And this is a spare system I wanted to bring home and finish configuring because I needed to get it Office 2010, get it upgraded. once we turned it on, and then it was on for a few minutes, we seen that it worked. We might have left it on a little too long. We go to shut it off, and it's doing one of 40 updates. And I'm like, oh, after the hours that we put in, I was not going to wait for 40 updates to happen before I take this computer home. It clearly states, do not shut this machine off while these updates are happening. Do not turn off the power. So what do I do? And Ken's warning me, don't do it. Don't do it, Mike. You're going to regret it. I hold the power button in. I think I had to hold it in for a minute. It really didn't want to come off. And then boom, it shut off. I said, no problem. You know what? It's going to pick up. We're going to have no problem. I get it home, and you know, later on, I turn it on. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's some problems. Windows did not want to update. I was lucky the machine booted, but Windows did not. This is Windows 7 Ultimate, and it did not want to update. Every time I updated, I got the error 802.4402C Windows update error. I was trying everything. So we're going to pause that story for a second and its solution, because a few days before, I had the same problem, but it was not a self-inflicted wound. It was a system that we were trying to update Office 2007 to Office 2010. And what happened, we noticed that it kept erroring out. And when we looked at the error, it kept telling us, wow, apply all the Windows updates. We're like, well, how many Windows updates are there? So I went and looked, and Windows updates was not working. Anytime you're searching for that, you always get an article or a reference to the Windows System Readiness Tool. Well, I ran the Windows System Readiness Tool, and it takes a long time to run. Let me tell you. I mean, a long time. Then it said there's a hotfix it wants to apply. So I'm like, okay, I let it apply the hotfix. Then you have to do a reboot. Well, after all that time and running the Windows System Readiness Tool, I was no better off, and I was getting an error. Although a different error on the Windows update, it was still an error. So now I decide to download the tweaking.com's all-in-one repair tool, and I download that, and I pick to fix the Windows update only. Ran its thing, takes a couple minutes, you know, it's redoing, re-registering all those DLLs, and it's changing where it's going to go for its updates. It's a great reset to try to fix Windows update. Oh, also before that, I tried the Windows fix it, and that didn't fix it. So I do the Windows, I do the tweaking.com repair tool, reboot, and it did it. Actually fixed it. I've seen this work and I've seen it not work. So it really depends on the situation, but it worked and there were 81 updates. I was like, wow, I can't believe there was this many. We let it go. All the updates. Boom, 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 boom. All the updates. Reboot it. Office 2010 upgraded perfectly. Matter of fact, the system was snappier. I don't know if it was the combination of the system readiness tool and then the tweaking.com's fix of the Windows update, but this definitely fixed that computer, and it was running great. And now got that all working. So getting back to this error that I'm having with the Windows update, I try all those things. No joy. I still don't have an update until I come across an article. The person very brazenly says, this will fix the error. You got to open the registry and you have to tell the server, the Windows update, you got to change from a 1 to a 0 in whether it's looking for WSUS for its updates or not. And once you make that change, you restart the Windows update service. Guess what? It worked. There were 80-some updates. Piece of cake. It worked beautiful. I'm going to have a link to that article. It's a very simple registry change. Takes a few seconds. Restart the Windows update service. fix the problem. You need to add this to your arsenal of possible solutions to the Windows Update error, because I have seen so many different things fix Windows Update, and it depends on the situation. I have never seen this fix. Once I did that and it worked, I said, well, I got to share this with everybody. That's the Windows Update problems that I was running into. Here's another one. And this is an old solution. And I think a lot of you, if you've ran into this, you probably already know this particular solution. But if you don't, here it goes. A client who is a financial company, so they have certain websites they have to go to, and they cannot have anything greater than Internet Explorer 9. They have to use Internet Explorer. You cannot run Firefox in IE mode or whatever. It has to be Internet Explorer 9 or 8. They cannot have IE 10. They cannot have IE 11. Now, these same people on their home machines have troubles by suppressing those updates because Windows, Microsoft forces an IE 10 and now forces IE 11. So unless you are astute enough to go in to custom your Windows update and hide those updates, they come down. Well, if you go to IE 10 or 11 and you try to use the Small Business Server Remote Web Workplace, this is for remote access when you have Small Business Server, they refer to as RWW. So if you ever see RWW, that is Remote Web Workplace. If you have IE 10 or 11, you get an error. You can't connect unless you do the following. And here's what you do. And I had to do some testing, and I had to remote in, and I have IE 11. And I couldn't get in until I did this because there was a problem that someone was complaining about the remote web workplace, and it had been so long since I even tested it. I needed to try this. So I needed to do this. You have to go to the trusted sites in Internet Options, and you have to add the website that you're going to for the remote web workplace. Then there's a menu in IE, and I don't know if a lot of you know this, but if you go Tools in IE, there is an option called Compatibility View Settings. And in there, you can add domains. You must add that domain for the remote web workplace. So go into the trusted sites in Internet Options, go into the compatibility view, and add that domain. Restart Internet Explorer, remote web workplace works. Took care of that this week. Here's an interesting one from yesterday. I get a call, panic call from a client in the morning. She says, Mike, I really blew it. I opened up an email that I shouldn't have from you that said it was from UPS. I even clicked on the link. And once I clicked on the link, it's a mess. There's all sorts of things popping up. Malwarebytes is going crazy. It's saying every few seconds it's blocking some IP address and it's popping up and it's going crazy. I said, I can't get to you, but let me connect in. I connect via instant house call. We run CombiFix. Now, CombiFix, when it's running, will disconnect you. So I get it running, and then I disconnect myself. And I'm talking to her on the phone. I said, just let that thing run. When it's all done, let's take a look. Well, it did remove some things. So I thought, oh, it probably removed the infection. It did not. Malwarebytes is still going crazy. It's blocking something from trying to get outbound. And it keeps popping up. IP address, different IP addresses that's trying to connect to. I researched a little bit with this problem, and maybe it was removed, but we need to remove all of the internet cache. Now, this did not fix the problem, but I still think it should be part of your things to do when you know you have an infection and you do a clean, you got to get rid of that browser cache. And the best way to do that is CCleaner. So use CCleaner to clean up all the cache. Doesn't do it. I said, hang in there. It's close to your end of the day. I said, I will get to this tonight. If I can't get to it tonight, I'll send my son out Thursday morning. So last night, before I started recording Tech Vets, and I actually mentioned this in the beginning of Tech Vets, I connect in and I said, boy, this has got to be a rootkit, right? If I threw CombiFix at it. I actually ran a few other things. It did not eliminate it. I run TDSS Killer. I mention this because TDSS Killer is so fast to execute. Put it at the top of your list for repairs. I ran TDSS Killer. I may run that 50 times and it not find anything. Well, it found something, and it was it. It found a rootkit and said, would you like to cure it? Yo, yeah. Clicked OK to cure it. Needed to reboot it, reconnect it, instant house call, and seen everything was calm. Malwarebytes was happy. Nothing was trying to get out. My client was happy today. I left her a note on Notepad. I always do that before I exit out. I'll open up Notepad and write a nice comment and leave it on the screen and then exit out. And I put in there that I fixed the problem and I ran the TDSS killer, and that's what eliminated it. And I got a great text this morning. She was so happy, so that was great. Next story. Let's move to this morning. I have a client to visit, and I'm there with the CPA that we are now installing QuickBooks 2014. Kudos to Intuit. The server component that they have now is far, far better than any previous version. If you have a server that is going to be hosting the data for QuickBooks for all the workstations, there's a separate installation component. Go custom after you have the, you know, the big download for QuickBooks Premium or whatever it is, you know, 2014. And then pick that the data will reside on this server, and but not the program. And it installs a server component that you can configure that you just run. There's a little program you run and you point to where the data is. It's piece of cake. It's so easy. So I create a folder on the server, and this is also Small Business Server 2008. I create the folder, then I go into Active Directory Users and Computers, and I create a security group. I put the users who's going to be using QuickBooks into the security group. I then go to the folder. I create a share for everyone, but then set the local security at the file level security to give the QuickBooks group full control. Figure put a little server lesson out there while I was doing for you as to what I'm doing. So now I have that folder locked down to only those individuals on the network that needs access to QuickBooks. I then take the program to all the workstations that need it. I map a Q drive back to that QuickBooks share. And here's the tip. When with the CPA, we created the company file for the first time very quickly, but it automatically creates that local. I wish when you were creating a new company file, I wish it would say, where do you want this located? Because it defaults to the public documents folder on the local machine, not my server share. So I just pick up that data and I move it to the Q drive that we just created. So now we open it up and we want to point to that. We get an error. When you are copying all of that data over to now a server, there's a file that's .nd. Rename it to .old. And it will recreate a new .nd for the new location. Little QuickBooks tip there, when you're setting up for the first time and you're moving your data, you're moving that company file from a local machine to a server, remember to delete that .nd. I don't like deleting anything. I always rename it to .old because you never know if you ever need it again. You can always rename it back. So renamed it, and that took care of the problem. Now, if you have multiple people, make sure you go to File and switch to Multi-User. And in a multi-user environment in QuickBooks, you now got to create user accounts within QuickBooks for each of the users. Created them. So I'm doing this morning. At the same time, they tell me, and the internet is so slow for this company. This is a fairly new retainer client. When I say retainer, a lot of you who are new listeners or you don't listen to Tech Vets, a retainer client is just a client that prepays for priority support and pays a monthly fee to me because they use me monthly. And it then gives them priority access to getting support quicker than someone else who is not a retainer client. So they are under contract with me. So now this is a client that is a, you know, is a very small retainer contract. The internet is so slow, I find out they have a fractional T1. I feel like I'm in the 80s. I'm like, I can't believe how slow this is, or maybe 90s. I'm just shocked. I ask for their telecom bill. I look at it. They are paying an outrageous sum. I said, you have to get either Fios, or they're actually in my area here, my neighborhood. I said, you got to get Fios or Business Comcast. I said, for your, and you're going to save thousands of dollars, and you're going to be hundreds of times faster than you currently are. They're not even a full meg for, I felt like I was on dial-up when anytime I'm over there. So we go back. I've never really been at the router and at what they have, and I see the big box from Broadcom and the, you know, they have a Sonic wall, firewall. And I was looking, I said, wow, we're going to replace this with the Verizon Fios modem, if you can get Fios. And we, you're going to like this. I just moved the router as I was looking at the cables. Okay, everything's good. I go, and I'm going to my BNI lunch, which is every Thursday. That's the Business Networking International, the group that I belong to, where that's a referral-based networking group, where we refer each other business, and it's how I've gotten most of my clients. So I'm at this lunch, and I get a text saying, Mike, we have no internet. We're going to call Broadcom right now, and we're going to find out what's going on. I said, okay, great, keep me posted, because I'm in the middle of this lunch and lecture and everything. And I get a text back saying, Mike, they say it's on our side. And I reply back, I can get there, but it's going to be like about an hour and a half. And they said, no problem. But I say, look, go back and just reboot everything. She rebooted everything. No joy. No internet. I said, I'll stop by. I cancel a meeting with another client because we're going to be talking about what they're going to be doing for shared folders. It's not an emergency. I now have an emergency situation. So I come back to the area, and I go in. I said, let's go back. And I look at the one cable, and there's no light for the internet connection on the Sonic wall. I touch it, and the light comes on. The cable was that sensitive. By me, earlier in the morning, when they were showing me the back, and all I did was move it, it was that sensitive, and that cable must have just come loose. I went to my car, got a new network cable. I threw that one out, and I just plugged it in, and it snapped in both, and we got a great connection. And I moved it around, and it was fine. So we have a faulty network cable. The cable just couldn't make a good connection to the Ethernet port on the back of the Sonic wall. In a couple seconds, I had that fixed. I caused the problem in the morning, and they understood that nothing should be that sensitive. You know, that was a problem waiting to happen. And it just so, I'm glad it happened under my control that I was available and able to fix it. So I was very happy. That was a very quick fix. And that's what actually freed me up a little bit late afternoon where I had scheduled that long meeting, and it was nice not having that meeting, and had some free time this afternoon, which I put to good sleep by having a power nap, and that's why I'm feeling so good right now. So that was the loose network connection. I want to double back on some comments here about the infection that I forgot to mention. Make sure for your clients that falls for phishing schemes to look for something in an email. If you open an email before you dare touch an attachment or go to a link that's within that email, look at who is the email addressed to. PayPal, for example, will never say, "Dear Madam, Dear Sir." It will say, "Dear Michael Smith." It'll say, "Dear John Doe." It will be your full first and last name. A great tip-off that an email is a phishing email or something bad is when it starts out, "Hi," or "Dear Sir," or "Dear Madam." Do not click on those links. There's a lot of great phishing emails that look like it's PayPal, and they're just trying to get your PayPal credentials. A frequent one that I'm seeing is from UPS and FedEx. Now, unless you deal with FedEx and UPS every day and they have your email, they're not going to email you. And here's a great tip. Let's say you're waiting on some packages from Amazon. Go to UPS, FedEx websites, and if you want to track anything that's happening, instead of them emailing you, have them text you. That's a lot safer and it's a lot easier. And then anything that comes in from UPS or FedEx or any shipping carrier, delete it. Don't open it. It's the phishing scams that causes most of these infections and all these problems. You got to get rid of them. You got to not open those emails, and you're going to be a lot better off, and so will your clients. Something I'm hooking up this weekend, and I'm going to put a link to Amazon for this, and it's the MediaLink router. I love this little MediaLink router. I use it all the time for my clients, small businesses. Most of the time, I'm using it as a guest Wi-Fi network, as a totally separate router. And it's the MediaLink wireless and broadband router. I had been paying for a long time $49. Last week, it was only $19.99. I bought five of them. I noticed tonight, it's $29.99. But that's still a bargain. I was hoping before I started the show tonight, I was hoping that it would be $20, and I seen it was $29, so I'm glad I got my five. I got a big Amazon box here with them all. I have a client that asked me this week, "Mike, what should I do to set up a guest Wi-Fi that's separate from our network?" And I don't want to go in and change anything on the back end of the network. A beautiful thing here is make sure the Ethernet side of the IP addresses will not match anything, and run a cable from the WAN connection of the router to any regular port on the back of the cable modem or however the main internet is coming in to the office. This will give that router a unique IP address and on the WAN side, and then on the LAN side, LAN, you make sure that it's an IP scheme that's like 192.168.200 or .300, some different subnet. And then now you're set. And that's what I do all the time. I use these devices for guest Wi-Fi. I use them for access points where you dummy down the router to make it an access point by turning off DHCP. Don't plug into the WAN port. Give it a static IP address, and configure it like an access point. They're very easy to configure. I love them, and I'm going to have them. A link in the show notes where you can buy it from Amazon. And while you're there, anything else that you buy from Amazon, or if you know any friends or any associates, neighbors, share my Amazon link. It's amazon.mikenation.net. Your price remains the same, but a small piece comes back to the Mike Tech Show and helps support the show. And I want to thank you so much for all of your support and your continued support of using my Amazon link, and also stopping by and trying out Instant House Call. Check it out. Kick the tires. Play with it. You will subscribe. You will like it. If you need remote support for your clients, it's the best remote support software. Also, Fab's Auto Backup for Tech. I'll have a link. And soon, I will be linking the new Bryce's new business kit. Version 3 is coming out. And I have all my affiliates set up. And I'll be getting a sample of that new version to take a look at. I'll look at that and check it all out. And then share that with you soon. That's it. Hope you learned something and liked it. There was lots of great little tips that I've been... all the different solutions and everything I've been working on in the trenches this week with my clients. I hope some of that will be useful to you. And that's it. Have a good week. I'll see you back here next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everyone.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.